Doghouse is about to kick off, so stick around. Folks, welcome to the Barber Motorsports Moto America recap show. Because Phil and I just came back from Barber Motorsports Park, where we spent the last, 5 days?
Five days we were down.
And we had a great time. And what a beautiful facility that is.
Gorgeous.
It's one of the nicest tracks I've ever been to. Warren, you really missed a great time.
Oh, no, I did. I saw the pictures on Facebook and Twitter and everything. It looked like, yes, I had a really good time. I didn't see very many pictures of you in the wheelchair.
He was editing that.
There was
a
couple.
He was editing
that. There was a couple, but not very many. And the Rascal was pretty good, too.
Yeah, at Walmart. Yeah. I don't know. Phil was he was pretty good about that. He had a lot of opportunities to take pictures of him in the wheelchair. He didn't take so many. But when we were at the museum, which, by the way, if you've never been to the Barber Motorsports Museum, I think that's definitely a must-see. It's every bit as nice as the track. It's a beautiful building, really nice display. And I'll actually be doing a video later this week. It's going to have a lot of the photos that we took and even some video we took inside the museum. Yeah. And we're also got some video we took at the track and pictures of the races and a bunch of stuff. It's all going to be come up this week. But just, I was really impressed with this facility. I really was.
It really is. The track is phenomenal. You know, the thing that impressed, this is my first time going to Barber. And the thing that impressed me the most was that on TV you watch it, and it looks like there's a little bit of elevation change, but those are some big hills.
Shocked at how much elevation change there was. There's a couple places in there that I can think of. One is right as you're coming into turn one out of the when they kick off, and they go into a big roller coaster like turn series, which has a dramatic change in elevation, including a complete 360-degree turn, right that they go right into when they're doing, the superbikes are doing 180-plus miles an hour coming into that turn. It's just amazing to watch.
It doesn't look like it's that high of an elevation change on TV.
It doesn't, but it's big.
It's very big.
It's big.
Yeah.
That was one thing that impressed me about the track, the facility. It was really nice. The grounds... they do IndyCar, they do Le Mans there, they do a bunch of other kind of racing stuff there. So the grounds were set up, so it wasn't like the road race tracks that I'm used to where you can pull your camper up next to the fence and camp. You know, the spectator areas were for walking traffic only, and they had parking areas, which was actually really nice. You know, nobody came and parked their camper in front of you or anything like that. We did have one jerk on a motor scooter, but I just figured I'd bring up that if you're that jerk.
We had a couple people. Yeah, the jerk.
Oh,
the
and then the guy in the plaid shirt.
Some guy and his wife came up and sat like directly in front of us, and because we're looking down, we were sitting above that turn that I was just talking
about.
Yeah,
we had to be 60-70 feet above it.
I would say so.
Yeah,
every bit
of it.
Yeah, I would say so.
Is that the ones from the photos that you posted?
Yes.
Us? Yes. Okay.
Yeah. The most recent photos. That's we were so busy Friday and Saturday that. We didn't get to see much racing at all on Friday and Saturday because we were busy. We were out getting interviews. We were, Phil got down into the starting grid, but, we were running. I wasn't running too well, but we were moving around a lot. We worked those 2 days pretty much the whole day.
And we didn't have, Friday and Saturday is when we lined up interviews for, but, there were some red flags and stuff, which changed times on everything. Mm-hmm. And then it was so hot, the guys were coming out, and before they would do interviews and everything, they went into the trailers and they showered and they cooled off because
they were
the
smoking.
Track temperature was 130. Yeah. It was hot. It was slick. It was not a, even though it was hot when we were at VIR, it wasn't that hot.
You're down in the deep south,
but it wasn't humid. It was actually more comfortable down there than it was up here, from what I understand.
That's surprising.
Yeah, you guys got worse weather than we did.
I lived in Anniston, Alabama, which is not all that far.
Right.
For a couple years, and it was smoking hot every summer.
Well, that's what we expected.
Yeah.
We expected it to be really hot and humid, and we were both pleasantly surprised. We were also pleasantly surprised that the first night, couple nights we were there, we didn't see any bugs at all. You know, it wasn't buggy at night.
It wasn't buggy, wasn't anything, you know. It was pretty nice. I mean, I do have a couple complaints, you know, about the trip, and some of them are like, I can't believe that.
Did they all start with Ken?
No.
Ken did that?
No. The restaurant selection in the town we stayed
in. Ken selected this restaurant?
No, it was more like, the town we stayed in, which was Hoover, and the hotel was very good. Nice. We stayed in a
home. Yeah, it was a very nice hotel.
It was a very nice hotel. It was easy. We found a back way over to the track, which was an enjoyable ride. It took about 15 minutes instead of going out on the highways and stuff like that. But the town itself was like 15 years old.
Yeah.
So everything there was a chain restaurant. Yeah. I traveled like that. I want to go someplace other than a chain restaurant.
Yeah.
You know, so it was kind of hard finding places to eat. You know, and that's not a slap on the track. That's just saying we should have been a little better prepared. We figured, all right, you know, it looked like a major road. There got to be some mom and pop places. There wasn't any. Yeah. You know,
there was one place we went to, and I think was recommended by somebody else who has spent some time down there. But we went to, and we was just kind of we weren't impressed by it. You know, I think our last night there, we ended up going to a chain. I'm not going to give names out because you don't advertise on us. You don't get your names mentioned. But we went to a chain restaurant Sunday night, and I think that was our best meal that we had.
Yeah, it definitely was our best meal.
I will mention one chain of restaurants that we went to down there. At least one in particular, because we went to a Dairy Queen and found the only Dairy Queen in the country that doesn't have chocolate ice cream. And I don't mean they had a broken machine or were out. I mean, they don't have chocolate ice cream.
I don't think I know of one that does have chocolate ice cream. They are white soft serve, and then you put mix into it. Cookie dough or something like that.
I've never been to one that didn't have soft chocolate ice cream.
I'll double check the one up there in my hometown to see, but I don't remember seeing chocolate up there.
Your hometown of like West Virginia?
No, here in Leesburg. Okay.
We were blaming that on Alabama. We don't serve no chocolate ice cream.
I've never seen a Dairy Queen that didn't have soft chocolate ice cream.
I'll double check, but I don't remember seeing
it. And I don't even want to admit how many Dairy Queens I've been to because it'd be embarrassing, but that was pretty shocking. In fact, we told other people in the town that they were shocked about it.
I mean, that was traumatic to us. It was such a hot day.
It was. We were really looking forward to it.
It went so well with our meal. Right. We were like, soft ice cream. And Ken's like, yeah, I want soft chocolate. And, you know, I was like, yeah, I'm going to get a twist. Mm. And we pull up there, and it was like.
You guys don't know how bad. I just want to jump right all over that.
But it was.
I'm going to let it go. Let it go.
It was just bad. You know, but other than that, I mean, it was great. I really enjoyed some of the things at the museum. I'm going to make two critiques of the museum, and I don't even care. If the people from the museum are listening, then they should pay attention. The one thing I did not like about the museum is there was no rhyme or reason to it. There were bikes.
Organizationally.
There were a lot of nice bikes, and the displays were nice. The problem is they'd have like a 1990, you know, or a 2000 Hayabusa next to a 1915, whatever.
There was no flow.
There's no flow.
There was some because they had a display of Indians that had early Indians in it, a bunch of them, and they were all together. And there was some the displays.
There was the military bikes and the race bikes. But other than that, everything else was just
then. There was
random.
It just seemed like it was a sprinkling, and it didn't seem like there was any rhyme or reason. If there was a rhyme or reason, it just escaped me.
Yeah, I couldn't figure it out. And then something that in pictures I was so looking forward to see, and things looked so cool when I saw the pictures, were those big shafts of bikes that go the five stories of the museum.
Right?
And everything like that.
You always see that as the iconic picture of
the museum.
That's
the iconic picture of the museum. The problem is they're on the backside of the elevator, and there's absolutely nothing you can do to check out the bikes there.
You can't see them?
Not from closer than 40 feet.
Huh.
You're looking down. There's no way to view those bikes.
I always thought you could get in and the elevator would be like a glass elevator so you can look at them as you go up.
But you really can't.
Yeah, you really can't.
The angle they were on, you didn't get a good view of them.
But I mean, I would say
I was just disappointed in that. You know, I was like, oh, wow, that's going to be so cool. And then to sit there and to see them, and you could see them from like 30 feet from the ramps. They have ramps that go around too. But it was like, I couldn't, They had a couple. They had a cool drag bike there. You couldn't see it. You know what I mean? You could see it from a distance. It was just a little like it was a little bit of a letdown. You know, but that, I mean, other than that, I mean, it was really cool, and I wouldn't say don't go. Trust
no,
me,
I would say
I am
go.
Not saying don't go.
Yeah, I would definitely say go. If you're anywhere near the Barber Motorsports Park, you got to go to that museum. In my opinion, it's the knocks on it are small compared to the value. I think it's $15. It's well worth it. Phil and me were there longer than I thought we'd be there, and I had a really good time. And I could have spent a lot more time looking at individual bikes. There's some really really cool stuff there.
You know. So did Phil? Did you roll him into traffic at all?
In
did
his
you
wheelchair?
Even? Yeah, in his wheelchair. Or did you threaten to roll him into traffic?
No, I did let him go one time going down a pretty steep hill at the track.
Yeah,
you know, I was just like, ah, maybe we'll get sympathy something.
Yeah, he just screamed, "Go for the brakes! Go for the brakes!"
I'm like, "Let it roll! Let it roll!" Yeah.
No, it was pretty good. I mean, and I had a problem with the wheelchair, but that's not a story for the show. But anyway, we did I forgot, lost my whole train of thought about the museum. Yeah, because I definitely do think you definitely want to do that at the museum. I had a great, oh, I know what I wanted to say. What I wanted to say was, and Phil and me were there for the
Dane Westby.
The presentation and the entry of Dane Westby's bike into the Barber Motorsports Museum, and that was really
That's
nice. Kind of touching, too.
Yeah, it was so. I was kind of expecting like a ceremony or something, but it was more like,
very much for the
summer.
Family.
Yeah, it was more for the family.
I felt a little bit out of place.
Yeah, I did. A little bit out of place because it was like the family and team, Ken, me, and like two other.
And it was very emotional.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of crying. It felt a little bit weird, but it was kind of cool. We knew exactly where his bike was going to go on, right next to Danny Eslick's in a Daytona display. So it was a cool thing.
It was cool.
Anyways, we're going to roll out to a break. Right now, and we come back, we're going to turn the show over to Warren, and Phil and me are going to go home. That's pretty much going to be it.
Well, so, you got to come back for the racing segment.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I guess we're not going home just yet. So we'll stick around.
Find chocolate ice cream.
We'll go find soft chocolate ice cream. All right, more Doghouse coming your way, folks, so stick around.
Welcome back to the Doghouse, where if it weren't for motorcycles, we probably wouldn't be here.
Oh, we'd be doing something else.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something probably not as nice or not as fun.
We'd be doing something else.
Probably, we'll be doing our second plan from Barber.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, spending $200,000 on a hot car, you know, a Veyron or a Lamborghini or Ferrari, high-end Porsche, that doesn't sound too crazy, does it? Because those things go for quite a bit of money.
I mean, it sounds crazy to me.
Yeah,
I'm not Durka.
Yeah, if money wasn't an object, I don't think that would be crazy.
Yeah, it wouldn't be too crazy.
In the world of Top Gear and those guys, that's not crazy money, though.
Well, they don't talk American money in Top Gear. They talk pounds and...
Pounds and pounds and pounds.
Liters or something
like that. And quids. And quids.
Right.
Which is the same thing, by the way. Now, Honda Motorcycles is coming out with a superbike that you can buy yourself for $184,000 U.S.
A track-ready superbike?
No, a street-ready. You could probably run it on a track.
They do make street-ready superbikes right now.
For $184,000.
I know, but I'm just saying they do make street-ready superbikes right now. So what's the magic in this that would make it? That's why I asked you if it was like a race-ready bike.
Well, it is essentially their street-legal racing bike from last year's circuit. They made some changes to it to make it mass-produced.
Which one?
200.
The MotoGP?
MotoGP, the HRC.
Okay, the
RC 213 V-S.
Okay.
S is for street.
And they do have a race track package, which I believe is going to be like 214.
Yeah, he raises it, but it's not going to be available in America. It's going to be available in Australia and a few other places.
Yeah, well, you can always get from one to the other.
I don't understand the Australia thing, but okay.
Apparently, they're richer than America.
It's,
I guess.
Or something is upside down.
Maybe. Okay. I don't know.
Anyway. But But what you get for your $184,000 is, in addition to the base bike, you get the massive swing arms, the shocks, the slipper clutch, magnesium wheels, the brake calipers are all the same as it is on the original race bike. The street version features an aluminum frame, underseat gas tank, carbon fiber reinforced plastic bodywork, just like the Superbike race bike.
Yeah.
So it's all pretty much the same. The powertrain is a 999cc V4 connected to a Speed 6 gearbox that is very, very close to the competition version. The difference in it is that the 200 edition, if you get 1 to 200 of these special bikes, you get pneumatic, or not, you do not get the pneumatic push rods, you get the steel spring rods. So a little less. I mean, you pay another $200,000, another $20,000, maybe you can get the pneumatic ones.
Okay.
What's
the advantage of this? I'm trying. I mean, so
you can show up to bike night and tell everybody you spent $185,000.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking. I'm not quite.
that's kind of what it sounds like. You know, that's like Durka walking in here and saying he bought a $20,000 vacuum.
How does that compare, say, in horsepower and tech and torque numbers to the CB1000R?
It doesn't say.
Okay.
But I would imagine it's a little bit higher.
That's kind of the comparison.
Yeah, no more questions.
Yeah, I shouldn't ask questions. Well, sorry.
Some of the things it does do is that if you get the extra kit, like if you live in Australia and pay that extra, you'll get your be able to go up to 13,000 RPMs and produce 212 horsepower.
Okay.
But here in America, the best you're going to do is 156 horsepower at 11,000 RPM. So probably a little bit better than the CBR1000.
Okay.
But I don't know what the CBR 1000 kicks out, so I don't.
Probably not far from that that second number, the lower number.
Yeah, now the guy who wrote this article, which I didn't capture his name for this, he says he's speculating that the reason that we're not going to get the heavy-duty race kit here in the U.S. is because of EPA and noise restrictions.
Well, if it's a track bike, then none of that applies.
It's not a track bike.
It's a street legal bike. But you can get a track version of it, right?
Well, you can create a track version if you live in Australia.
Okay. But it's primarily a street bike, but the only... so they're probably having problems hitting the emissions numbers. I can't imagine... Are there any federally mandated noise regulations at this point?
Yes.
What are they?
Like 90 decibels, something like that?
Well, my understanding was that only applied on motorcycles to certification of exhaust, and only applied if they tried to use an aftermarket exhaust.
Well, if you would rev this thing up to its 11,000 or 13,000 RPMs...
There's a lot of street bikes on the street right now that'll do that.
Well, it's
not a Harley.
No.
They do rev very high.
Oh, yeah. I've been near some of those bikes.
Yeah, I was going to say...
They're louder than my Harley, which is...
When they're screaming down the road behind my house, I can definitely tell you they're out there and they're probably pushing 12,000-13,000 RPMs.
Well, Honda is claiming that the RC213 V0-S is the most expensive street legal production motorcycle ever offered by a major manufacturer.
I don't know if that would be my brag. Hey, we got the most expensive bike.
Yeah,
I mean that works so well for Motus.
That's it's not a not a sales thing.
Right,
no,
you know,
especially
when Suzuki, we saw the showing off laps of a supercharged Suzuki that's now the fastest production bike. It was 300 horsepower.
It is. No, I think they're missing it.
As of Saturday, they said it. They used the word is.
Okay, I thought they said it was.
I thought the Kawasaki was with the new H2.
Oh, maybe that's what it was. It was a Kawasaki.
Yes.
Yeah, it was a Kawasaki that's 300 horsepower.
Yeah, that's the
track one's 300 horsepower and the other one's 200.
Right.
The street legal one's 200, and they're not talking $184,000. So it's kind of like, what am I getting?
Well, actually, they actually compare this bike to the Kawasaki H2R, which runs about $50,000.
Right.
To $184. And what's a Ducati. 1199 Super Allegro runs about 65 or 70, somewhere through there.
Mm-hmm.
So, as far as I'm concerned, I don't know what you're really getting for your $184,000 that you can't get out of one of these other bikes if you just throw a few extra things on it.
My guess is the reason the price is where it is all in the components, but that's fine if you're going to a racetrack. And where, you know, things down to that level on the component level can mean tenths of a second at the track. On the street, tenths of a second aren't that important.
Well, it gets you the light to light.
So I don't need to have $60,000 brake calipers on the street.
Well, if you're going green to red and you want to stop real fast, you might need it.
If you're going that fast on the street, then that's not really, you know, what they're supposed to be building bikes to do, right?
You know, well, right. it's a bragging right there. It's why do you buy a $300,000 Bentley? You know, yeah, what?
It's exactly what it is, bragging rights.
Ken's, you know, Volkswagen will get you to the same place in roughly the same time because you can't go through traffic like that and stuff.
No.
It's bragging rights. It's hey, I have a $184,000 Honda. I got a MotoGP bike. I mean, that's what people are going to say.
That's right.
And they're going to sell. Exactly
right. I have all the same stuff they have on the race bike.
Right. And they're going to sell maybe 200 of them to really rich guys like Leno and some of these big collectors that are going to put them in their collections. And that's all you're going to hear of them. We'll never see one on the street.
No. Well, if I did, I'd be going, really, when you looked at the picture, which I'm sure we put up by now.
Yeah, we had it up.
It doesn't really look that much different than any other Honda or Suzuki or Kawasaki. Yeah.
It's all in the details.
High-end street bike, yeah.
It's all in the details.
You have to really know what you're looking at to be able to pick it out.
Well, they kind of did. They listed out all the components that are.
But if it's going by me at 50 or 150 miles an hour, I'm not going to be able to
Here's
see those
question.
Components.
Here's the question I can already give you the answer to, and it's probably the most valuable thing on the bike. It's not the MotoGP chassis, I'm sure.
No, this is an aluminum frame.
It's
aluminum
not
frame.
The MotoGP chassis because there's no way they'd be putting that out on the street.
Well, if you want to get one, Ken, or should I say Durka?
Actually, you know
Durka
what I do?
Durka Howell III, if you want
I,
to get
I,
one.
I want to get one. I do want to get one.
You can get,
No, I just want to have the money to get one. Then I would like to get one.
All right, well... You have to go to your Honda dealership on about the 12th of July and place your order.
Okay, I'll get right on that.
Okay,
you know I will drive you there because you should have somebody opening your doors for you.
That's right.
You got to buy a bike for that much.
Absolutely.
Money.
Somebody's got to carry your Grey Poupon in and out of the store with you.
Yep.
It's
and they are only making 200 of them, so you better.
I better get up there quick.
You better get there quick.
Yep. Lucky for you, you're on the East Coast. And you'll have a jump over them West Coast.
That's true. And they'll probably sell more of them on the West Coast than they will on the East Coast anyway.
Oh, yeah. So, but yeah, it's just crazy.
Yeah, I saw that and I said, it's ridiculous. Speaking of ridiculous.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to go to the next one. You got another question about it?
No, I was going to question. I was going to make another comment, but go ahead.
Okay, well, speaking of ridiculous, Marlon Brando's motorcycle he had bought new in 1969. And this is well after the Wild Ones. It's definitely not a Wild Ones motorcycle, which I think was a Triumph.
Is that before or after he had to get the, you know, the springs from a semi put on his bike so it could hold his weight up?
I have to say this is probably before because in 1969 he was still kind of young. So he did
I don't think he was young in 69.
Well, he was what, in early 20s when he did the Wild Ones?
Which was early 50s, right?
I was like 59. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Yeah. He wasn't all that old. In 69, he was before the Godfather, but he bought a Harley Davidson motorcycle, and now they're trying to sell it. It's up on auction for a starting price of $100,000, and people are expecting this bike to go for $400,000 or more.
What
US.
Kind of Harley is it?
It's just a standard Harley Davidson FLH, Electra Glide.
You know, here's the thing I don't get. That's more money than some of the Steve McQueen's bikes that he rode regularly went for. And Steve McQueen is a legendary motorcycle rider and racer. Marlon Brando is legendary for being fat.
Well, I'm playing the Godfather.
Yeah, well.
He was fat. Fatty Boombalatti.
Yeah, that's right. He was even fat then.
But, I saw this and I said, okay, yeah, he was the Wild Ones. This is not the Wild Ones motorcycle. Yeah, this is a much older, much newer, whichever way you want to go with it.
Much newer,
motorcycle.
Much, much newer.
It's a Harley versus, I'm pretty sure he rode a Triumph in the Wild Ones.
It's a standard bike, not a rare bike.
It's completely stock, it's standard, nothing special about it. And they won $400,000 for it because Marlon Brando rode it.
That's the only reason.
That's the only reason.
Here's a question for you. What would a bike of that vintage in decent condition be worth nowadays?
If it was in... you know, immaculate condition, you could probably pick it up for about 20, 25.
That's what I would think.
Yeah.
And I think that might be stretching it.
Yeah, and that, I said that's in immaculate condition.
Right, yeah.
Hardly any miles.
Right.
And this bike doesn't have a lot of miles. It's got 13,800 miles. So
that's pretty low.
That's kind of low, but, you know.
Which just goes to show you how much of a motorcycle rider he was.
Didn't get
He's
out.
A status symbol thing, so.
So I saw that.
$400,000 so you can own something that Marlon Brando had.
And put it up in your museum, your personal museum.
Yeah, it might be the best opportunity for them to get a decent amount of money for it.
Well, so Ken, so now you can go out and buy, you just need about $600,000. You can go out and buy both of these bikes.
I'm all over it.
You know, it's auction. I don't think it's going to go anywhere near that.
I don't think it will either. I find it very hard to believe that. That may just be, and that price in there is what the auction house is saying.
They were saying $200,000 to $400,000, right?
That's a huge range.
Yeah. I think it peters out. I'd say probably peters out at 130, and if the reserve's higher than that, it doesn't sell.
Well, you got to also remember these are the same kind of people who thought that the Easy Rider bike, even though everyone was telling them it was.
We did see in the museum.
Which we actually did see in the museum.
You saw a Easy Rider bike.
Yeah, right.
Well, how do we know if it was the actual one or not?
But, you know, these are the same kind of people who, even though they knew there was questions about the Easy Rider bike, ran it up to $1 million.
Yeah, and it wasn't the Easy Rider bike. And you're never going to see that. That's because it doesn't exist anymore. Because here's what they did say in the Barber Motorsports Museum. They did say the one we were looking at was not that bike because it was a replica bike that had been built some years later.
Also, they were very
And they said, here's
it.
What they say at the museum, okay? And it's something that I've come across many times, and I totally believe this. One bike was destroyed, and the other bike was parted out, meaning there is nothing left. And everybody that's built one out there that claims that it's the bike out there is full of crap.
I agree with you.
So there you go. So this may not even be Marlon Brando's bike.
It's not Michael Landon's either.
Or Michael Landon's.
Or Dan Haggerty's.
Right.
All right, guys, we're going to go to break, and when we come back, we're going to talk some racing.
And there was a lot.
And there's a lot of it, and a little extra special news about a former guest of the Doghouse in the racing segment who has done something special that no other American has ever done before. Stay tuned.
And we're back here on the Doghouse. We should start with Pro Motocross, I guess. I was going to say, we went down to Barber Motorsports and jump right into that, but we'll start with Pro Motorsports. They were over there on the farm in Pennsylvania. What do they call that? High Point? But, yeah, I call it a farm because it's somebody's old farm field that they raced through there. They've been doing that for close to 40 years. I mean, that was one of the original tracks. So that's always cool. I like the history of that. And Ken and I actually passed Muddy Creek on the way down to Alabama.
Did. We actually saw Muddy Creek.
Outside of Bluntville.
Yeah, outside of Bluntville. So we were, what we were thinking is next year we'll go down a week early.
Yeah, because we could have went to that one and it would have been only a couple days before we would have been down in Barber anyway.
Yeah, that's actually not a bad idea.
Mm. That's kind of the plan for next year. But they were racing over there on the farms in Pennsylvania, and you get that farm dirt. And, as a guy who used to work on a farm, you'd say, you get that farm dirt on your money. And Marvin Musquin, he's got a lot of money, or at least points, to put that farm dirt on. Because he had a pretty great weekend there in the 250s.
Yeah, he swept them.
He swept the 250s. And you also had one good race at a scene in Sorolla, and then one not-so-good race.
That seems to be more the rule than the exception recently with him.
Yeah,
he'll put together a good race and he'll wreck himself or get taken out.
Yeah, I think it's got something to do maybe with a little bit of his training. Maybe he's not back in shape yet because he seems to do the first race better than the second race.
Mm-hmm, yep.
I was glad to see him get the second. I think he's an up and coming star. Musquin, he just was dominant, and when the guy dominates like that, there's just not much you can do.
Well, and Martin got not a great start in the first race and a horrible start in the second one, so that put him in behind the eight ball to begin with.
His first one was pretty horrible, too. I mean, his brother beat him, and I think they were racing for, what, fourth and fifth or fifth and sixth in the second one?
Both races, they ended up racing each other as much as anybody else, which was which was kind of fun. That was really the only great part of the race on the 250s.
Yeah, and some of that might be the track, so I wouldn't read that much going down the road into that.
No.
Somebody who's not
and the points are still real close.
Right.
Somebody who's not in 250s who's not having a season that I was kind of expecting was McElroth. He's kind of faded.
Yeah, he is.
Maybe he's just an indoor guy.
We don't talk about him.
No, he's not, but he started off okay, but he's not been, it's consistency. You got to do better or manage to at least maintain the being a good points capturing position, and he's just not doing that. He's all over the place. So,
and then he is in eighth place in points.
Yep.
Yeah, but that's not what I was expecting.
Yeah, well, he's got 109, and Martin Muskin's got 219.
Yeah.
So he's pretty much out of it.
Yeah.
Right. And then in 450s, Dungey and Roczen swapped it up. Both won one and got second in the other. Dungey pulls the overall because he had the better second moto.
Roczen had the overall,
thank you, because he pulled the double. Jason Anderson had a pretty good weekend.
Mm-hmm.
He seemed to be doing good. I think Barcia's getting in a lot better shape because he seems to hang out in the front longer, and he's doing better.
He's staying out of his own way.
When he stays out of his own way.
Yeah.
I said he was getting in better shape. I didn't say he was becoming a better racer.
Right.
And Christoph Purcell, he's got good starts. And in Supercross, the whole shot's everything. But in motocross, it's not.
It's not everything. It's still very, very, very important.
Well, he finished fourth for the weekend.
Right.
And he just seemed to ride a clean race both times. He just couldn't keep up with the front runners.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they stretch out pretty quick. And then it's just, it's hard for anybody, even the top guys in this sport, to hunt somebody down unless you have an edge to begin with. So if they get out ahead, you better have more speed because you're not going to make it up just on pure skill. Not the way these tracks are.
Well, both Barcia and Purcell got a great start in the second race.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, right there at the top, I think Purcell even had the whole shot, or Barcia had the whole shot.
Yeah, both whole shots.
Okay, so, he faded pretty quickly, so I don't know if that goes back to what you guys were talking about with his conditioning.
They say you got the whole shot when you make it to the first turn first.
Right.
But in reality...
they got a whole shot line now.
They have a whole shot line now.
Yeah.
And realistically...
But that doesn't mean you're winning.
Right. realistically, it's not... It's a little bit further down the track. When you're ahead by the end of the first lap, then it's a real advantage. Because the problem is that you could have three or four people who are all together, and which is what happens most of the time. And if you're in that top group, you have a shot at it. And the people that are farther back don't. They really don't have a shot at it. So, you can't say, oh, he got the whole shot, and then he drifted back. Well, that probably got passed by three or four people pretty quick, or two or three people pretty quickly after he got the whole shot. So,
But just like the other ones, once you got past Roczen and Dungey,
it was nothing.
I mean, there was a good 10 seconds at times between the next guy.
That's what happens when you're the defending champ of Supercross and the defending champ of Supercross. Motocross.
Mm-hmm.
Going at it, that's for sure.
You got two great riders there. Ken kind of thinks that Roczen's got the odds on to win right now.
There's no question in my mind, a healthy Roczen is the best motocross rider with Eli Tomac out. But I don't know, is 85% Ken Roczen enough to do more than win some races? Maybe not. But is he going to keep getting healthier? He seems to say so. He's telling the press that every week he looks like he's getting more and more healthy. And if he can do that good when he's not 100%, imagine how strong he will. And that's kind of what he did last year. Last year, when he was healthy, there wasn't much anybody could do. And Dungey will be the first to admit that he's stronger indoors than he is outdoors anyway.
Well, he has looked good all spring and summer in the motocross.
Yeah, but if he's, that just means that the rest of the field is not any better than him.
Yeah,
in motocross,
he's better than 99% of the field, but it's that one or two guys that are better than him that are just
right. And I think if Tomac was still in there, he'd be my favorite still.
Yeah,
well, he'd still be the points leader even if he had a bad race.
Tomac was just on fire. It's just tragic what happened to him. But
he's been out for two races and still in the top 10 in points.
There's a huge gap is what happens in talent.
And he's had his surgeries and beginning his recovery things, and we'll see.
Are they saying when he's going to be back?
Yeah, when he's healthy. They're not even predicting. They're talking.
Oh, he's out for the season.
He's out for the season. They're talking the start of motocross. Supercross.
Oh, he will make supercross. Okay, I didn't know if he was going to make the supercross start.
But they pretty much don't think he's going to make the Monster Million.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're not holding their breath for that.
Probably wouldn't be in shape for it, I imagine, at that point either.
Now, Phil, you shared a video today on Facebook from High Point of a guy crashing out.
Yeah, I don't remember who that was.
But was that from this year?
I don't think so. I think that was an older one.
Because I know that way they didn't show that on TV at any point. Yeah. And that was pretty spectacular.
Yeah, and I'm not sure it was High Point where the Supercross was. I think it was another track. There's a couple High Points.
Okay.
So I'm not sure it's the same one. It was just a horrible wreck. But, yeah, so that's kind of motocross. I mean, Dungey's in 450s. Dungey's leading the points. Roxon's coming up behind. I believe it's Anderson in third. You know, so there's lots of racing to go on. Ken's right. Roxon can easily pull this out, but you know, all it takes is an accident here or there.
Oh,
Tomac.
Well, yeah, Roxon cannot afford to, even minor injuries when he's coming back. So if he one bad spill and that his chances could dwindle to next to nothing.
Well, Dungey's 40 points ahead of him essentially now,
right? So. Which is nothing.
No, it's not right.
with as many races that are left. That's nothing.
But if he does tweak himself up again, that's what I'm getting
at. Oh yeah, he's in deep trouble.
He's going to fall back pretty quick.
And he would probably it wouldn't take much for him to get seriously injured too, because he's not
healthy.
He's a little fragile yet. Let's put it that way. But I tell you what, I mean, he's just, and a lot of analysts have said this, that as he gets healthy, he's going to be, he'll be outrageously strong.
He has
number one,
better.
He's really well rested compared to the rest of the field who raced in Supercross, and that takes a lot out of you. And
yeah, you don't get a recovery.
And he got
time.
To rest right. a lot because he got injured in the fourth.
About midway.
Oh, yeah.
Fourth race or fifth
oh,
race.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but then he came back for a couple. It was about midway when he punched
he
out.
He came back for the last two.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, he had, you know, you were definitely right. He has looked better race to race to race to race.
Right.
So if he continues that pattern, it's going to be pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, it's up in the air, but his talent outdoors is pretty spectacular. I haven't seen anybody that looks as strong as him outdoors, except maybe Chad Reed when he was in his prime, when he's healthy. You know, when Roxon's healthy, I haven't seen anybody that I thought was as talented as him since Chad Reed years ago. Chad Reed's not that strong anymore.
They got this weekend off, and then they go to Butts Creek here in Maryland. Mm-hmm. So they got
the
Father's
Bowl.
Day weekend. That's
home of the Mud Bowl. When it rains there, it is miserable.
Yeah, because you're like literally practically in the water to begin with.
Yes,
you know you can see the bay from the track. Yeah. You know the high hill on the track, you can see the bay. So it gets muddy and nasty over there. Do we want to talk MotoGP or Moto America?
Well, talk MotoGP, because I think if we start talking Moto America, we won't ever get done with MotoGP.
All right, so we'll talk a little bit about MotoGP. They were in Catalunya, in Spain, which is just outside of Barcelona.
Which translates in, I'm Marc Marquez, I forgot how to race.
Yeah, pretty much. Marc Marquez, you know, Ken brought up a good point. He got married over the winter, and that's the end of his racing career.
I think
is that what we're declaring?
There's something it's not talent. There's something mentally wrong with him, and marriage will do that to you.
Yeah. Marriage
well,
will
you know
throw
that.
You up.
Know that. It
blows your, well, it, I did read an article just as I was getting ready to leave the house today, so I didn't get a chance to print it out and I had to go look it up on the computer. But Marc Marquez is saying that he wants to go back to last year's chassis on the bike.
Oh yeah, blame the chassis for him putting his foot down
he's in a
flat track.
Go back to the clinic.
He was saying he was saying that this new chassis stands him up too fast in the turns.
Okay, well, here's what I got out of watching it. And I by no means do I claim to be an expert in riding motors, racing bikes, street bikes, track road bikes. Is that, I know, I'll get spit it out sooner or later.
You're not an expert in
now you see why I pushed him around. Now you see why I pushed him around a wheelchair.
And anyway,
scooters.
And anyway, if you watch that wreck carefully, what you'll see is Marc Marquez trying to get his foot caught in his rear tire.
Yes.
And what he was doing was, when you see a lot of racers, and he's one of them, they put their leg out. And there's a couple of theories about why people do it, but it has more to do with adjusting your foot position than anything else. And some people use it as a balance thing. They claim it's a balance thing. It's a security issue, I think, for some. But in any case, he's a flat tracker, Mark Marquez. And he put his foot down. And you don't put your foot down on the track at 150 miles an hour heading into a turn. Unless you're
J.D. Beach.
No, I don't see J.D. putting his foot on the track during a road race.
He was on the far corner when we were in the media center. I watched it on Saturday. He pretty much was planting his foot and sliding the bike.
I didn't see him put his foot on the track, because what happened when Mark Marquez put his foot on the track as the bike was leaning down, it almost took his foot off. His foot got carried back towards the rear tire, and I actually thought I'll have to look at it again because I didn't quite catch that. Take a look at it.
They show it in slow motion.
Yeah. And it could have been really ugly. It could have been the end of Mark Marquez's season. But yeah, then he's racing like he doesn't care.
He's back to Moto2 Marquez. He's back to
blaming the chassis. And when you start doing that, that means that it ain't working and you're looking for an excuse.
What I did read was that he rode the old chassis with all the new engines and stuff in it in practice a couple days this before this race, but because of the rains, he didn't get to ride it a lot. And he said that he claimed he was doing a lot better with that setup than he was with the new bike and the new chassis.
Okay, let's say that's true. Let's say that's true. There's nothing stopping them from racing last year's bike.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, there is.
What?
$2 or $3 million bill that this year's bike costs?
Well, if they have the old bike and he's taken out there and they're testing on it and he's whining about it, good. Go out there and win races.
Well, I got the impression the only thing was the same from last year's bike to this one was the chassis. They put everything else from this year's bike on it.
And last year they had a better rider.
Well, if HRC and Repsol could care less about that money at this point. They want the wins.
You don't want your name associated
with a bike that keeps going down.
Especially, we jumped right into Marquez.
Who finished third?
We finished.
HRC.
Who cares? Who cares about third place?
Who cares?
Let's talk about the bigger news, since we jumped right into Marquez and we skipped. The biggest news in MotoGP this weekend was the fact that Suzuki qualified 1 and 2, and the world stopped spinning.
but it was news, but it was very short term news.
It was definitely short term news,
like a quarter of a lap short term news.
But like, I thought, you know, people were talking about that in the media center a little bit at the Moto Barrick thing, and I'm like, yeah, is it April Fool's? You know what's going on here? But the Suzuki's got speed, and you're always fastest before you blow up.
Yep. That wasn't what happened this week.
No, it wasn't. They didn't
blow up. They just went back to reality.
Well, I think Maverick Vinales had his best finish of the year.
Which was six. That is his best finish of the year.
That is his best finish of the year.
Yeah, so. And nobody writes home about sixth place.
Oh, I bet he will.
Well, I mean, I guess when you're 12th place. Nicky Hayden would probably write home about sixth place.
Nicky Hayden would party his butt off.
The person that's the default pick for Olaf. Anyway.
Yes.
And you notice we really haven't talked about the Ducatis much lately either. They're starting to fade back as
well. No, they're not fading. The problem is that they're not... They're not racing the Yamahas for very much of the race, but Crazy Joe has still had a pretty decent race this week, and he didn't do bad. Dovizioso seems like he's having some issues in the last few races.
Yeah. Every time I pick him,
but the bikes are still fast. They're competing. The problem is this is one of those things where if you take the Hondas out of the mix, the Yamahas kind of have their way with things, and that's sort of what's going on. Danny Pedrosa right now is the better Honda rider. I didn't think I'd ever say that. You know?
Wow, that's kind of big of you.
But it's true, right?
It is. And, you know, Rossi maintained his one-point lead by scooping a second.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got a one-point lead going over to Lorenzo, which I think is going to fade. I hate saying this, but I don't see why. Where are they going next in that? Aston?
Right.
You know, that's a pretty good track for Rossi, but I think it's a better track for Lorenzo. You know, so we'll see.
I don't know. I mean, I think this year is really, it's very, very, very tough to say this year, because realistically, a lot of people in the pool, I know we're not talking about the pool yet, and we'll do that in a little bit, but a lot of people in the pool felt like I did, that Marquez was way overdue.
and that Lorenzo couldn't win four.
And I think he was, and I think he's just trying too hard.
Yeah, no, he's making big mistakes. That's why I'm saying he's back to being the Moto2 guy. In Moto2, he would try too hard and wreck. He wasn't wrecking because he was throwing the bike.
He was wrecking
because he was pushing too hard.
Instead
of being calm and doing it.
The year that Brattle won, Marquez came in second place, and he came in second place because you're right, he was pushing too hard.
Yeah.
And then the next year, he didn't have anybody that could push him as hard.
Right.
So maybe the problem is that
Yamaha bikes have caught up enough to push him.
And he's panicking.
Yeah, and he's mentally crashing before he actually crashes.
Yeah, he's not the same.
No,
something's very, very different about him. He doesn't seem as comfortable on the bike. He seems like he's pushing at times. He seems at other times that he's not racing as hard as he was, and then he has to push to try and make up the last minute.
Well, let's get him the new chassis, the old chassis put back on the bike.
Well, are they going to do that?
I don't know. I'm just making a joke that we're trying to.
Well, I'm
giving him a way out.
Well, let him do it.
So we're going to go out to break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit of Moto America. And we'll also wrap up the pool.
Okay.
All right.
And we had the teaser about the American doing.
Oh, yes. And we'll talk a little bit about Warren's teaser of an American doing something he's never done. You're listening to The Doghouse, and we will be right back. And we're back here on The Doghouse on ntnradio.com. We should talk about the pool a little bit. There wasn't much changes in the pool, although position-wise. Although Hawkeye did make up a lot of points on our pool leader, Olaf. You know, a lot of us had very similar spots where we were in groups. A lot of people lost points on Marquez because he wrecked. And, you know, wreckers are checkers. And
I didn't lose any points on Marquez.
No, that's a good way to get your mic muted. But actually, and this really sucks, Ken, in general, but Warren actually was the high scorer points week, so congratulations, Warren. Mm-hmm. He scored 45.
They say about broken clocks, right twice a day. So.
Hey. Yes, they do say that.
If I could be right twice, I'd be a happy camper.
but in general, we didn't move around. I'm just kind of glancing over at the point standings. It wasn't a lot of big movers this week because we all have very similar picks. The picks were dominated by Lorenzo and Marquez in Moto 2. We didn't really talk any Moto GP in Moto 2. Zarco came out and won, beating Rabat and stuff. And Lowe's had a pretty good weekend too. So you know there was not a lot of points spread in the pool for that.
Yeah, I mean it's. I tell you what, I mean, if you didn't watch that performance by Zarco, which I thought was a pretty impressive performance.
It really actually was.
Miserable start. He almost got taken out by Sam Lowe.
And Rins.
And Rins had a good race, too. And there were a lot of guys out there, and Rabat's having a good race. Rins is having a good race. Zarco gets put in a really bad position, fights his way back. Phil was really frustrated. We're watching the race together.
Oh, my God. Like,
he goes, I knew I shouldn't have picked after you picked Zarco, you know. And it's like, here's the thing. I tell you what, I'm comfortable picking Zarco because I think he has a legitimate chance to win every race he's in the way he races. Right.
And I think the one guy that's kind of surprised me is Rins. He's racing hard every week, every race, and he's doing a decent job. But he just can't seem to get that last push to take a first-place finish.
Well, he's had his growing pains. You know, he's a Moto 3 champ, so he's got talent. You know, he came out of Moto 3. It's his first year in Moto 2. He's got, you know, there was some growing pains, and he wasn't healthy. You know,
I didn't know that.
He had a couple of nagging injuries. They weren't like wasn't like keep me out of the race injuries, but it was like he's not 100%.
He has looked good in almost all the races. He just can't seem to get over that last.
Yeah,
little piece.
It's growing pains.
Yeah, it's growing pains.
It's a much bigger, much different bike than he's used to, and it's his first season.
And I think the Rins you saw this week. Now I'm not going to say for sure in the next round that's going to be the same Rins, but the Rins you saw this week is the Rins of the future. That's the Rins who will be there, maybe towards the end of the season or maybe all next year. You know, he'll be somebody to deal with if. But if he finishes the season strong, even without winning the points, there's a chance he could be picked to move up. You know, there's going to be opening rides, probably both the Hondas. you know, so I could see Rins being somebody that might actually get the nod to go up. You know, Zarco's keeping his points lead. He's pretty safe. He's got like 40 on Rabat, which is just crazy. It's good to see. Rabat's finally made some kind of recovery and worked himself into second place. Lowe's, he has his good days. He has his bad days. This was a mediocre day.
You don't know what he's going to have each race to race.
Yeah. And Rins is starting to catch up with that group. You know, but we'll see. He's going to be somebody that it's just going to be a we'll see kind of thing this year.
Yeah.
And then I guess the big racing news for us this weekend is that we were at the Moto America races at Barber Motorsports Park. And great facility, great racing. Both super sport races, I thought, were phenomenal.
Yeah, both super sport races were really good, and the... And there was some other cool racing going that we got to watch. We got to watch the RC Cup.
Yes.
Races there.
It's the one with the KTM.
Yeah, KTM 390s.
Young kids.
And we actually got to go in and talk to the KTM people and see the bikes up close. And it's really cool. You can come and just rent one for the weekend and go out there and race. I mean, it's very cool that people can be able to do that.
Did Phil do that?
No.
No.
And then they had another series out there, which is the Bazzaz 600 series, which was like...
I don't know
that one
at all.
It was okay.
Exactly.
It's Super Sport 600. And
Stock 600.
Super Stock 600, right. And it was okay. I thought the RC Cup was more interesting personally, but that's my personal take on things. But the Super Sport was great. And we should also mention, too, before any of the racing and the qualifying and any of that took place, Phil and me went to an event at a local restaurant in there that Moto America... held, and you know, we pretty much got all our interviews set up. All the racers were there, and we got to talk to most of the racers were there.
Pretty much all the most of the top name guys,
right?
And most of them were really cool.
Where was this at?
It was at a local restaurant there.
So, you know, I want everybody on the show to pay attention. Every time we've talked about Moto America, this segment and the previous segment and the segment before that, all rotated around restaurants.
Yes.
Yeah, except when we were at the track.
Except when we were at the track.
You know, they didn't have a restaurant on the track?
Well, they had a bike night.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're ever in the area for one of the Moto America races, like you happen to live in Birmingham this past weekend, or you go to the race or something, pay attention to their website, because I don't want to sound like I'm knocking them, because it's a new series and these things are hard to do, especially when you're not from the area. But they had a pretty lousy turnout at the bike night. There were not a lot of spectators, fans there. And that's because...
It wasn't publicized.
Right, it fell together late on. I mean, it fell together on them Tuesday night and they had it Thursday.
Man, it worked out great for us.
It worked out... Now, if you knew about it and you were there, you literally could have sat down and hung out with any top-name racer in the series. Day, Eslick, Fong... Heron. I mean, I'll tell you what. One of the highlights of the weekend for me this weekend, and I know this isn't talking the races, and we'll get to that in a minute. One of the highlights for me this weekend was actually a conversation we had off the record with Josh Heron at the bike night. Talk about somebody who had just things go completely wrong for him last year, but he's totally matured into... I would say if I was running Moto America, he would be my spokesman for the sport.
He'd be the poster boy.
He would be the poster boy. I mean, the things he was saying, you know, I mean, he actually came over and thanked us because he knew how far away it is from our home area for coming.
Well, that's pretty nice.
And for covering it. You know, like, I mean, we met him at VIR. Was the first time we met him in person. We've had him on the show. But he actually thanked us for that, and he was thanking people for coming.
He cares about the series.
He cares about the series.
That's good. Because if the racers are going to care about the series, it might have a better chance to prosper.
Right, you know, and I just think he's matured a lot in the last like 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, with everything he thinks, and I think going over to Europe, he saw what it could be. You know, the guys that are over here, the guys like Josh Hayes, he's never really seen that. He's went over for one MotoGP race, but he never saw everything else that goes around with it. You know, and a lot of these guys over here, I'd say Roger Hayden's probably seen it because his brother's gone through it. You know, but the rest of them, they're not really seeing that.
They're not seeing 100,000 fans at a track.
And they're not seeing the celebrity status walking down. I mean, they were standing in the bar there, and the people in the bar had no idea who they were. You know what I mean?
And I mean, there's a lot of differences. But I think he in particular definitely matured a lot. And we see that because we've had him on the show, even amidst it, what he was going on with Caterham last year. And he definitely seems to me to be a much more matured racer now.
Well, and it's nice, and I really like the way this whole series is going. I wish I could have went with you guys, but just couldn't. But I think Moto America is starting to get things right. It's just going to be a matter of time for them to get everything matured, to get their processes down, to get their procedures down, to get their publicity down. And, you know,
yeah, it's a growing pain.
It's been 6 months since they stood this thing up.
It's amazing what they've accomplished already.
Yeah, and you know, talking to Wayne Rainey and some of the other people involved in it, they were saying we wanted to get the racing product good, and then we'll work the kinks on the other stuff.
And that's probably a good way to do it.
I just figured I would throw it out. I know a lot of you guys out there that listen to the show enjoy the AMA races. If you're in the area, pay attention to their website. When they have a bike night, go, because chances are it'll be a great opportunity to interact with the racers, the guys you see out there. They were even more accessible than like when you're getting the autograph signs and stuff like that.
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean, they were just pretty much hanging out eating dinner.
And they had a little area they set up, and they
signed autographs, they give away stuff.
They're all together in one place. When you go to the track, you got to go around to each of the tents.
I'm really regretting not going with you guys and just blowing my boss off and going anyway.
You should have. You should have. Whatever you're doing at work is important.
You know.
Clearly. I guarantee you it wasn't as important as in my level of ranking things, but the paycheck does help.
Yeah. Well, you know, people get sick and end up in Alabama all the time.
Yeah. And that's where the best glaucoma facility is, or whatever you want to say. You know, cold allergies. Your allergies dictate you go there. But it was. I just wanted to bring that up before we got too far into the talk. The Super Sport race was pretty much both Super Sport races was a battle between Bobby Fong, Josh Herron, and J.D. Beach.
And they were almost a mirror of each other.
And the races were almost a mirror of each other. And I like all three of those races. I think all three of those guys are good guys. You know, especially that, you know, Bobby Fong has just turned into, you know, we've never had him on the show. We did do the interview with him on the video. But Bobby Fong's turned into a pretty good, friend. He sees us walking through and he's yelling things at us and stuff.
We get that a lot.
But Bobby Fong's a positive.
Get out of here.
You bums. I got to interview J.D. Beach. I put him on the spot, told him I expect him to win the Super Prestigio, the U.S. one. He's like,
but he hadn't even heard of it at the time.
No, he said he wasn't invited.
Oh, okay.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, you have to be invited. He said, I don't think the invitations have come out. And I was like, no.
We'll take care of that,
even if I have to start that up on Twitter. But he pulled the double, and afterwards, the press conference afterwards, when they were on the podium, Herron had more bike on J.D. Beach every place except for the last set of turns.
Yeah.
You know, every other place, you'd watch him, and he'd pull up on him. He'd even pass him in some of these turns. And then coming down, especially on Sunday, we watched over by turn one, so we couldn't see the home stretch coming in. And all of a sudden, you know, we'd watch J.D. Beach on the far side of the track get passed by Herron, you know, and Bobby Fong would catch up with him and stuff, and he'd go, all right, he's going back. Then he'd come back around, and he'd have like a half a second lead. And he was just powering it through the last turn.
Yeah, Herron clearly had the straightaway speed.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable. Coming out of the set of turns right in front of us, J.D. Beach would have a big lead on Herron. You'd see Herron screaming down the back stretch, coming up right on him. And I never saw him actually pass him on the back stretch, but he'd get right up next to him.
Sometimes by the spider web, which is where they have that big iron spider, he passed him. Right. I know in race one, he passed him there a couple times. I don't remember if he did on race two or not. Right. But then talking to Herron and stuff, and listening to him talk in the media center after the first race, he said, you know, they a bunch of people were asking, Dave Schwartz from Road Racing World magazine said, what did you think of J.D. Beach's line through the last turn? And Herron had this look, and he's like, I've never seen anything like it. You know, it's a big the track was really hot. It was really slick out there, everybody was saying. And the last turn, all these guys were sideways in and braking on the sides of their tires. And Beach would get about halfway through it, stand the bike up, kind of flat track it around. You know, and he was like on the brakes and then on the gas. And they said, you know, Herron said, he goes, I was going to try that, but I thought I can't try that in a race with Bobby Fong right running down my back.
Right.
You know, he goes, and I thought, well, I'll just hold on to where I am because I can't do that. You know, not that he couldn't do that, but that he couldn't do it at the time.
He wasn't
going to
risk it.
He wasn't going to risk it at the time. And it was just a phenomenal line that he took through there. Mm-hmm. And he was just lightning fast through it. And he ended up pulling a double, and that's great for him. He took the points lead because he was in a tie with Herron, took a points lead. It was the Triumph Superbike Shootout. Bobby Fong got 2 seconds there in Super Sports, so that was good for
two-thirds.
I mean, two-thirds. I'm sorry. Thank you. Two-thirds. The podium was identical both days. It was Beach, Herron, Fong. So that was just good. Those two were the best two races of the week.
No question about it.
So basically what I'm hearing you guys say is that if you interview with the doghouse,
you win
the race.
And we've said that before.
And that's been true. And that was almost held true, except for they threw a in NASCAR you would call it a Jimmy Johnson caution, but they stopped the race early in the Superbike race with Bouvier crashed out and Hayes and Herron, and I'm not Hayes and Herron, Hay and Hayes Hayden. And Hayden. And I think Roger Hayden in the first race would have had him if they'd gone the full distance.
Yeah, I think so.
He was coming. He was catching them. And I don't think it was that.
And they stopped it very, very short. There was a red flag.
Yeah, they stopped it with 9 laps to go.
There was a red flag because of fluid on the track. And it hadn't even gone. If it had gone more than two-thirds, they would have called it a race. Mm-hmm. But it hadn't. It hadn't even gone two-thirds yet. It was a lap short of two-thirds. And we were sure that everybody was sure. We're watching the race, and we're sure they're going to restart it. And then they decide, just kind of out of the blue, no reason, no rhyme or reason, they decide to just declare Hayes the winner because he was leading at the time that the red flag came out. And
well,
he was leading the previous lap. He was leading the previous lap at the time the red flag came out. And
With everything, that sounded like you guys had a great time down there.
Oh, we did. And the
racing sounded good too. And that's the one bitch I got for this week's on Moto America is I couldn't find it on TV. I tried to go look at it on by round
time. You
know,
there was a different TV company there. I saw the trailer for the Fan's Choice TV guy, but it wasn't the same like film crew that they had.
It should have been CBS. Because CBS
be next week. It runs a week late on CBS. You have to watch it. If you want to watch it live.
I thought they had caught up now.
No. It doesn't matter.
Can always go to fanschoice.tv and watch it,
right,
even when it's on. If you can't find it on TV, you just put it on your computer.
What I'm trying to get at is it has been pretty regular every weekend, and they've been showing something, and I thought they were catching up with it on CBS Sports, but it wasn't there this week.
So the other thing, too, is that you're not going to see the Super Sport race on CBS Sports. They don't broadcast.
No. Yeah, and that's a shame because that was by
better
far.
Race. Yeah.
Those two races were by far the two best races of the weekend. Mm-hmm. Not to knock anybody else out there. Mm-hmm. And then the second super bike race, Cam Bouvier held on to beat Josh Hayes. So he held on to I think he built up a 6-point lead instead of just a 1-point lead going into that race, you know, because he had that crash on the first race allowed Hayes to catch up. And Roger Hayden came in third, I believe.
He came in third, I think, both races, didn't he?
No, I think he was second. He was second in the first one.
He was second because Bouvier went out.
Right, because Bouvier went out. So, you know, it was good racing too, but by far the gems this weekend were the Super Sport races.
Oh, yeah.
I think so. It was a good package. You know, if you're there, they got the fan walks. Everybody was accessible. It was really hot, so guys weren't hanging out at their trailers like they do in the past.
Yeah.
You know, I snuck around and Saturday night's races, I kind of ran through the pits to go grab a couple things and bumped into a couple guys here and there.
Did you have your clothes on?
Most of them. you know, so I bumped into a couple guys here and there and got to talk with them and stuff. And, you know, everybody was kind of excited about looking forward to Sunday. So it was good. And we got some good, you know, to tease what we're going to put up on YouTube. We got a Colin Edwards interview, which was really cool.
Yeah, Colin Edwards was great.
Ken did an interview with him. We got Roger Hayden. That was easily 10 minutes.
Yeah.
We got J.D. Beach. We got Jake Gagne, which was – Jake Gagne is another guy. I mean, J.D. Beach, I say time and time again, you'll put that kid on anything with two wheels, he'll race it, and he'll be respectable. I think Jake Gagne is another guy that. I mean, he was on his super stock, and he came in third – He came in third in the first race.
He was battling with the superbike guys.
He was out, bike wise outclassed and still battled with those guys.
And well, at some point, he
was on a backup bike.
Yeah,
well, that's one of the things that if you look at the standings and the race finishes, it's every week you see one of those bikes in the top three or four.
Yeah,
it's usually Gagne.
It's usually Gagne,
and they're definitely running with the big bikes.
Right.
Yeah. So he had a good weekend. We didn't really talk Superstock 1000, but Gagne had a great weekend, and just overall in general, he had a great weekend. You know, he really whips that bike around and does respectable against the super bikes. So that kind of wraps that up. They're off for a few weeks. Next week, I believe we have World Superbike in Misano. Yes,
Misano.
World Superbikes in Misano next week. We got anything else to say about Motor America? Or anything like that?
I don't think so. Like I said, we took a bunch of pictures. They're going to be up.
Yeah, we'll have some videos up. You'll have to check that out.
There's a bunch of stuff to be watching for later this week on YouTube. Which, if you haven't checked us out on YouTube, that's just go search NTN Doghouse.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, NTN Doghouse gets you there. NTN America gets you there. Mm-hmm. Anyways, we're going to wrap this show up for this week. We wanted to talk about Jason Uribe.
Yeah, because he was a guest on the show not too long ago, and he's an up-and-comer on the European scene, and he's the first American to win a French Superstock 600 race ever. Yes.
I believe last year when he entered the Superstock 600 race, he had a race and he kind of crashed out early at the very end of the season last year. Maybe he crashed out in qualifying and didn't get the race. I believe he had a crash, and I think that would have made him the first American to enter a Superstock 600 in France. Yeah. He had the win, and he had some news with that too.
Yeah,
right?
He had a great weekend. He just missed out on the pole, and during one of the races, the race two, he set a lap record for the track.
Where were they?
Lidon.
Okay.
I don't know where it is.
So you guys think that he's becomes a prospect for Moto2 for the U.S. maybe? We need one bad.
I think Moto3 first. He's 15. He's young.
He just turned 16.
He's 15. He's running the 60s, but he's already running the 600s.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. There's a lack of confidence in American riders right now. Mm-hmm. I would say
that's,
on the world
remember,
scene.
That's why he moved. He moved over to Britain.
Right. Because of that, I would not be shocked to see him on a Moto3. I would be shocked to see him on a Moto2 bike, not as an insult to him, just because of the way the world views us right now. But I would not be shocked to see him on a World Supersport bike or a Moto3 bike. That would not shock me at all.
Right.
And I think he probably actually deserves that right now. I think he's earned that. So. We'll see. I mean, I hope he does. I would love to see it.
The series needs an American in Moto2 as well.
They do, and I'm not sure, a little bit more news. Apparently, the guy who owned the team that PJ Jacobson was on, we talked about last week, how he lost his ride on like Tuesday and got a ride on Thursday. The guy who the team owner is vanished. He's like missing persons vanished.
Really?
Like the Czech police have him missing persons vanished.
Like milk carton vanished.
Yeah, like right.
It's always,
like,
always good to get an in job for the guy that signs your paycheck disappears.
Yeah, So PJ Jacobson got very lucky on that. Yeah. Core, who seems to be. What's it, Honda Core Racing, whatever they are, that just signed him, seem to be really happy with him and stuff. So that's good, and they're looking forward to what he can do after he's had more than, two practices on the bike.
Right.
But there's more to that story. I don't know what it is right now because there's, like, all of a sudden details emerging, But, you know, usually when the team owner vanishes, there's more than just Kawasaki pulled out.
Why are we having so much of this stuff going on with motorcycle? We had money laundering going on last year.
We had the cocaine. Remember a few years ago, one of the World Superbike teams thought that was a great way to do that? Yeah, Durga pretty much said it best in a way that we can't say it. You know, but we will definitely try and keep our eyes out on that. Although, I'm not really sure if I care because I think PJ Jacobson might be on a better bike right now. Yeah, it's a race winner. It's a more solid team.
It's a more solid team, and it's a race winner for one race at the guy's home thing. I think the bike he was on was a real good bike, but you know what? It doesn't really matter because a ride's a ride.
A ride's a ride.
Right now. So.
And we need PJ Jacobson to have one. Mm-hmm. And we're Americans, we're really happy. And, you know, with that, I guess we'll wrap this show up, and we'll see you guys all next week.